started, I want to thank everyone for coming. As we mentioned in the email, I guess most of you saw one version or not of the email. I had this idea really late last night, then I changed my mind, then I changed my mind again. So, l'chvod Rav Aaron, all the sides of the issue, and I couldn't make up my mind. But I decided at an army base a few kilometers from Gaza this afternoon that I wanted to do this, and Seth helped me be marbitzed. And I thought the idea is to speak about Rav Lichtenstein's legacy of Lamdus. And appropriately, for those of you who were at the funeral, most of the talking, which was by his children, were about him as a person and him as a father, which was appropriate. And even many of the Talmidim, really appropriately, those who were close with him, speaking to him about his Midos and his Tzidkus, which is appropriate because I think often it was overlooked, as often is the case with brilliant people. But I imagine that he wouldn't want, and certainly I don't think it should be, that of all things, the last, certainly something that should not be lost in all of this, is that he was one of the great Lamdanim of the generation, and as was mentioned by many people, was one of the great teachers of the generation. Very often, many of us, especially Americans, have a difficult time with his Hebrew, and even Israelis at times have difficulty with his Hebrew, as Americans sometimes have difficulty with his English. And especially as they got older, it wasn't just a question of language, it was a question of just... one of his simani zikna was that he didn't speak so clearly as he got older, so it was very difficult. And for many people, and I include myself in this group, we became talmidim of his writing. That even, you know, was you could look up in a dictionary, you could spend hours over one word or phrase, and for about 20 years at least, I would say, I've tried to be a chassid and a talmud of Rav Lichtenstein's shiurim, and that was in addition, at the same time, by being inspired to be a Talmud of his because of my main rabbi, Rav Rosenzweig. When we came to Israel 5.5 years ago, so my sabbatical, I learned and taught in Gush that year. And right away, the first day or two, I introduced myself to Rav Lichtenstein as one of his spiritual grandchildren. Since if my rabbi is like my father, and my rabbi is his rabbi. So I made him smile. I think he appreciated that. And the truth is, the reason that I'm here, in some part, is with him, because when I had to make the biggest decision of my life at the time, whether to make Aliyah or not, so I went to speak to him. I was hoping for 10 minutes, and he gave me an hour. The details of that conversation were actually quite remarkable in its own right, but not for now. But Lamaisa, one thing he told me, when I asked him whether it was even right, I had certain great gedolim in America telling me that I shouldn't make Aliyah. One said to me, maybe it's usher. They valued, or I thought they exaggerated, but they valued what I was doing in America. So I asked Rav Lichtenstein, because I know he's machshev what it means to be a rav in America and things like that. So he said to me in a way that was apparently classic for his advice, because he not only gave me hadracha, but he made me feel good about myself more than I should. He said to me, "Why shouldn't we also be the benefits of your talents?" Which he meant to say, and then he was expanded upon, was that he didn't feel someone who was in Clay Kodesh in America should come to Israel to be a farmer or to be an accountant, even though he thinks farmers and accountants are important. But if you're being marbitzed in America, he feels that that's certainly meaningful not to make Aliyah. I don't think he would have thought I should make Aliyah, or anyone in my position, if we was going to come here to learn in Kollel either. Not to work on the farms or to be... But, he says, if you could teach Torah here, so then why is Israel any less needed for Talmud Torah? And some of the frustrations in my Aliyah the last few years, I've wanted to go to him. I've oscillated between wanting and feeling a need to speak to him and then being embarrassed to speak to him. So I never followed up if what I was doing was sufficient for what he had envisioned for me. But certainly he had a tremendous impact on my life. For someone, we only had a handful of conversations. Yaakov was here. We took Yaakov to meet him when Yaakov had his tonsils out. Yes, Yaakov spoke to him about ice cream, about going to the same elementary school in Baltimore. He was tremendously kind to Yaakov. But indirectly, and somewhat directly, but mainly indirectly, a tremendous influence on my life. So I thought that for the next few weeks for the Shloshim, we would take Torah of Lichtenstein. I hope it's not wrong, but I'm not capable, I guess, of not trying to interject some of my own haras or not. But really, 98% of this is just going to give over his Torah. What I'd like to do for the next 4 weeks, all the weeks of the Shloshim, is to take different seminal pieces of his, maybe even some related to Avelos. He has a piece on Shloshim, which was in a book that I edited his piece with Daniel Feldman and Shmuel Maybrook, so maybe we'll work on that. But pick a few topics. There's also a possibility, if we can arrange it, to maybe have one of his true and closer Talmidim, who, if we can get to agree to come, I'll be happy to give up one of the slots. But hopefully we can meet regularly for this in the next few Thursday nights, as a tribute to him and to study the legacy of his lamdas. So when I was thinking of a topic to start with, I thought that since in Eretz Yisrael our Torah reading this week is Achrei Mos Kedoshim, so I would start with a topic from this week's parsha, which is a very important piece that Rav Lichtenstein has on Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol. Like many yeshivas, they have a weekly sheet. It's called Daf Kesher, and Talmidim write up Divrei Torah from Lichtenstein. So in Adar, Tavshin Nun Beis, the fourth week, they put out a piece for Lichtenstein, three pages in Hebrew, and then subsequently in the VBM they translated it and adapted it, all about Lifnei Iver, and specifically in the context of educational programming. So the Pasuk says in this week's Torah reading, Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol, Osakal Cheresh, Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol. And Rashi, it's interesting. Yaakov, can you bring another chair? Oh, you took it. Okay, okay, please, stand. So Rashi actually quotes only the issue of being bad advice. It's a fascinating halacha of Na'iver. Because you have the Pashta Sakra, you shouldn't actually trip a blind person. Then Rashi tells us that it also means you shouldn't give bad advice intentionally to manipulate a person. But the most well-known application is actually not in Rashi or the Pashtus of the Krah, but the Gemara in Avodah Zarah on Davav Amad Aleph tells us you shouldn't give Yayin Lenazir or even Evir Menachai to even to a Ben Noach. If they ask you for something that they're not allowed to eat, so you're not allowed to give it to them. It's interesting, the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos in Lo Sase Reish Tzadik Tes, so he starts with the bad advice, then he mentions you shouldn't help somebody do an Avera. The Rambam there, as well as in Mishneh Torah, asks an implicit question, which is how do you get from Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol to not helping a guy do an Avera? You know, it's one thing to have a Torah Shebaal Peh, but this is like totally far afield from the Pashtus of the Kra. So the Rambam there says very beautifully, he says it in two places as far as I know, maybe more, that when you are blinded by your lust, you're an Iver because of your Taiva. So then, you're asking for the Yayin of a Yayin even though you're an Ozir. So what do you mean you're blind? The answer is you're blinded by your lust. Your Yetzirah compromises, you can't see straight. And therefore, it applies from this pasuk that you shouldn't help a person who's blind, even blinded by his lust, do something. The Minchas Chinuch and Rav Yochum Fischer Perlau, perhaps and others as well, they both point out that it's striking that almost all the Rishonim, including the Rambam, none of them quote the pashtus of the pasuk. You can't trip a blind person. They even have a suffix. Would that be included? Maybe that's included in Vavdur Kamocha. Maybe there's other makoros for it, but it's just interesting. Anyway, that's all Hakdama. Adkan me, and maybe some other things for me, but Rav Lichtenstein starts the piece. It's interesting. I assume this is a shir kloli. I don't think this is a written tshuva that he gave, but it seems like he was responding to a question that he was asked by various kiruv groups or educational groups about having Shabbos programming. If you know, there's a good chance that the people who are going to come, dafka, the people you're trying to attract, who are not yet Shomer Shabbos, may very well drive to the program. So Rav Lichtenstein started the shir, and the write-up starts with the citation of very famous tshuvas of Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's interesting, even though Rav Moshe, we often think of, I think, accurately, both in Midos and in Hashkafa, as being matun or moderate, but there were times that he was extreme. Like all true gedolim, they had different approaches to different types of things. And on this, Rav Moshe is extreme, extremely extreme. And Rav Moshe holds, not only is it usur to invite somebody over as a lifnei iver d'oraisa, but Rav Moshe actually goes further. He says it would even be a violation of something worse, of it being a meses umediach. Of really, it's not just that you're helping a person sin, that's lifnei iver, but meses umediach, you're, so to speak, responsible, you're influencing him, you're trying to bring him off the derech. This is in Igros Moshe, Or Chaim, Chelek Aleph, Tzadites, and Tzadites. Before we see Rav Lichtenstein's analysis of it, just to mention kind of the big picture of this, a lot of contemporary poskim also addressed this issue. Rav Ozner, who was still in his shloshim, he's also a machmir, Rav Ozner. But interestingly, again, where you can't always predict who would be mekel, who would be machmir, one of the biggest mekilim in print is Rav Sternbach. I have a feeling he was influenced by some of his work in South Africa, where there's a lot of Bali Tshuva. And also Baal Peh, I don't know if it's in writing, but Baal Peh you do also in the name of David Cohn. That they basically have a heter kiruv. As long as the goal is reasonably that you're trying to be makar of people, it seems to be almost a blanket heter. As we'll see, Rav Lichtenstein's approach, which I also heard when I asked the Shiloh when I was an advisor of Francis Zweig, I went to Rav Rosenzweig, and he actually gave me a shita. I don't know if you heard it from Rav Lichtenstein or not, but he told me the same thing that Rav Lichtenstein said. And in both of their cases, it's really what we're going to see from Rosham Zalman Orbach, as a middle approach. But you have these two extremes. Rav Ozner and Rav Moshe seem to be totally usher. Rav Sternbach and Rav David Kohn seem to be totally mutter, at least if it's a Kirov context. How the great aunt or your cousin, if that's considered Kirov, to invite them over for Shabbos for the Seder, that's obviously a little bit touchier, but let's leave that aside for now. Let's speak specifically, you have a coworker or somebody like that that you want to expose to the beauty of a Shabbos. I remember when I spoke to Rav Rosenzweig, he's like, well, why can't you just have him over on a Tuesday? So I said, I was like 22 at the time, so I'm not really yet an expert in Kirov, but from what I understand, you know, the magic of a Shabbos meal is different than a weekday meal. So I said, okay, if that's the case, he want to understand. So that's the Hakdama. So Lichtenstein dives in, and right away at the outset, he disagrees with half of Rav Moshe. The half is relevant to our shir about lifting the Iver. I don't think we're going to have time to get into the Mesis part of it. Lichtenstein disagrees with that too, as do most poskim, but on the first part, Rav Moshe seems to assume that if you invite someone for Shabbos, you're inviting them, you're causing them. That's like giving yayin to a nazir. And Rav Moshe assumes that that's an isser d'oraisa of lifnei iver. So Rav Lichtenstein points out, and this is something that I've also seen in writing from Rav Asher Weiss, Rav Lichtenstein says he just thinks it's hard to comprehend that chumrah. The Gemara, which obviously Rav Moshe knew, the quotes, but the Gemara in the continuation makes a very famous distinction between Chad Avra Denavra and Trey Avra Denara, right? Yeah, let's say the Yain with the Nazir, right? The Nazir can't drink wine. So why is he asking you? Where is he? Where is the wine? And where are you? So the Gemara says, it depends. If it's on what the Gemara calls two sides of the river, meaning the Nazir is on one side, and you and the wine are on the other side. So he asks you to come send it over, to paddle your boat over. He can't get it without you. So you are enabling him. So that, the Gemara says, that's lifnei iver d'oraisa. But, and the pashas of the Gemara is, it's mutter. Says the Gemara, if it's chad avra denara, you're on the same side of the river, meaning that the nazir, or whoever is the question, could just as easily get the wine. So why isn't he getting it? He's lazy, he's tired. Whatever the reason is, he's asking you to give it to him. But he could just as easily get it. So the Gemara seems to assume that that's mutter. So it says, we'll see, in order to say this will be lifnei iver d'oraisa, you have to assume that this is trei avra denara. Trei avra denara means he's only going to drive because of you. He couldn't drive, or he wouldn't drive. So could drive is obviously absurd. Of course he could drive. But what about even would he have driven? So Moshe seems to ignore this. He says if you were the direct cause, you invited him, and it was a given that he's going to drive, Moshe assumes that this is d'oraisa. Lichtenstein, and again I saw this from Asher Weiss as well, this, it doesn't make any sense. He drives every other Shabbos. There's no reason to think that he's not going to drive this Shabbos. So he could drive any 100 places. He's going to drive to you or to your shul or to your house if you invite him. But you're not making him drive. He could drive anyway. Plus, in most cases, in theory, he could walk, right? You're probably not inviting someone from hundreds of miles away. So for many reasons, they felt that it's not even a question. Of course, it's not lifnei iver d'oraisa. I have here Rav Yaakov Ariel's tshuva, Spola Shel Torah. There's not quite Rav Lichtenstein, but it's appropriate to quote Rav Yaakov Ariel, because especially in recent years, Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Ariel apparently developed not only a very close friendship, but they partnered as kind of Ziknei Gedolim of the religious Zionist world on a number of issues. The two of them were like really the Gedolim, and they did things together in policy. So Rav Yaakov Ariel, he kind of takes a middle position. He says it's hard to know what the Metzius is. You know, really, maybe he would take a walk. Maybe he would spend the whole day watching college football. I mean, he can give that example, but for the Americans, that's relevant. Right? How do you know he would drive? So Rav Yaakov is not sure. He thinks maybe. He thinks at most it's a suffix. But other poskim, including Rav Lichtenstein, thought just for sure it's not. Listen, they were there. I say, yeah.
Even if he would drive, isn't like each mile more of an isser? So therefore, you're getting him to drive to your house, which he wouldn't have done. So therefore, even if he drives...
Could be,
anyways,
okay. Yeah, so again, obviously that those poskim, including didn't look at it that way. Right. But yeah, you're right. You're not even each mile. Every time you put your foot on the gas is another Isser D'oraisa probably for driving. So
would drive
right. Okay. Fair enough. So this is just one point. But let's take the Isser D'oraisa off the table. And by the way, in general, for lifnei iver shailas, it's usually off the table because we live in a world in which Isserim, whether it's whatever the issue would be, kashrus or. Right. Very rarely is there something only possible if you help somebody. That's not never, but it's very rarely. But let's take Rav Lichtenstein step by step. So he assumes that it's not Isser D'oraisa. He doesn't need your assistance to drive. He knows how to drive. It's practical. It's likely that he would drive. Is there an Isser D'rabanan or not? So I mentioned that the pashtus of our Gemara, the Gemara Avodah Zarah, just says Chad Avra Denara is mutter. Trei Avra Denara is usser. Mutter, really? It's mutter? So in the Gemara, you really, and certainly in Avodah Zarah, you really get that impression, or at least you get no counter impression. However, the Rishonim debate this, and most well known is a comment of both Tosfos and the Rosh in Masechta Shabbos and Dav Gimel. The famous opening Mishnah in Masechta Shabbos talks about the various ways the Ani and the Baal Bayis could be passing things. Anyway, in one of the examples, you get this sense, I think it's in Dav Gimel, that if whichever one of the person, the Ani, the Baal Bayis, you know, he lifts it up and he puts it in the window or out the window, that he did the Hotzah Daraisa, and the other person was Mutter. So the Rosh and Tosfos both ask, this is the Rosh is Aleph Aleph, the Shabbos is Tosfos and Daf Gimel. What do you mean? Without you, without the other guy, whether it's the Ani or the Baal Bayis, there would be no Malacha. So the answer, yeah, we only meant that it's totally Mutter, Linyan in the Hilchos Shabbos Shabo, let's say. But in a Chanami, there is an Isser de Rabbanon, which is often referred to as Misayeya. In other words, even if it's on one side of the river, he could the Nazir could get the wine. He could get the Ever Menachai. So you didn't enable him. He could have gotten it on his own also. So the Daraisa is you can't enable a person. The Darabanan sounds like you can't participate. Even though you didn't enable him, he could do it on his own. Clearly you're not as necessary, not as central, but you helped him, and that's itself a problem. So this is the famous Chumrah Shita of Tosfos and the Rosh. So here we have Rav Lichtenstein start with his legendary analysis. And he says that when it comes to this Shita of Tosfos, he quoted Tosfos, but it's also the Rosh, there's three ways we could look at this. There are three ways to understand what is this, quote-unquote, new Isser Derabanan. So he says one possibility is that we can understand the Derabanan as simply an expansion of the Daraisa. If the Iver Daraisa has certain requirements, right? More intense, but therefore also more limited. So we'll dilute it, but we could also expand it. We could apply it in cases that the Daraisa wouldn't go, but we'll expand the scope. It is, right? This is a famous Chakir in every Isser Derabanan. I'm sure in the Ian Balum just book they have a chapter on this. Right? So it's the same Isser, it's just expanded to cases that wouldn't otherwise have been caught in the net of the Isser Daraisa. That's one possibility. However, he says there's at least two other possibilities. A second possibility is that it's not Lifnei Iver expanded, but rather it's a Derabanan version of the mitzvah of Hochech Tochiyach HaSamisecha. Right? We have an obligation midaraisa to try to prevent people from sinning. Hochech Tochiyach, to prevent them. Here you're not only preventing them, you're helping them. Okay, you didn't enable them. He could have done it on his own. It's one side of the river. But you've certainly fallen down on the job of Hochech Tochiyach if you're now helping him and giving the Nazir the wine. So maybe that's not Hochech Tochiyach Daraisa, technically speaking. Hochech Tochiyach just refers to something else. But you certainly violated the spirit of Hochech Tochiyach. Maybe the Derabanan is a subset, not of Lifnei Iver, maybe it's a subset of Hochech Tochiyach. All the Rishonim said was that that there's another Isser Derabanan, that the mission of the Gemara only met Potter from Hilchos Shabbos, but there's some other Isser Derabanan. So maybe that other Isser is a subset of Hochech Tochiyach.
Okay, Hochech Tochiyach is an assay, and this sounds like a los assay.
Who said it's a los asa? It's not clear. It's not clear. That's what he suggests. Maybe it's not.
So you say you're already. Now I'll be Messiah.
I'm saying, but maybe that means because it's. I didn't mean it, at least according to this possibility. It doesn't have to be that precise. Whether you call it an Isra asay or just a Bittal asay, it could be a variation or abuse, so to speak, falling down on the job of Hochech Tochiyach.
Why aren't you over on the Oraisa?
Well, maybe by, again, we have to give a shir on Hochech Tochiyach when those parameters apply. But in Echrami, maybe that would be, in other words, maybe you've already missed that. Could be that you already missed that. You know, maybe two for the price of one. I'm not sure. But that Rishonim aren't addressing. Again, that
so
seems to be.
When would you ever need the Derabanan of Hochech Tochiyach?
It's a good question. I guess I'm not sure.
It's a case where you wouldn't have listened to you, so Hochech Tochiyach doesn't apply.
Well, so we're going to get to, again, please God, time permitting, we're going to get to what's the nafkamina between these. So they may apply in different cases. So Seth's alluding to what I was going to answer you. Let's hold off. If I don't answer you, you could ask me later. Okay, let's hold off for now.
Do any of the Rishonim write Hochech Tochiyach?
I don't believe so, if I remember correctly. I don't believe so. The third. Right. No, they just mentioned it's right. The third possibility, which is, I think, the most typical and the most common one is Misayeya. What do we mean by Misayeya? Again, you could call any of these three things Misayeya. What Lichtenstein is really getting at is what do you mean by that? But the third suggestion, Lichtenstein said, when he refers to Misayeya, is a completely new Isser. In other words, it's not a subset, it's not a derabbanan version of Neiver, it's not a derabbanan version of Hilchot Yechiyach. It's its own halacha. It's called Maseiah. We're not allowed to participate. We're not allowed to help. Now, right away, Rav Lichtenstein suggested a very important nafkamina, which he applies Daraisa later in the piece, which is based on Arashi and Gittin and Daf Samach Aleph. He suggests that Maseiah would be fundamentally different if we viewed it as something independent. It's fundamentally different than the other two because Maseiah only applies during the Maisa Avera, but it wouldn't apply before, which a little bit anticipates something you were suggesting. Hochech Tuchiyach, things like that are before. Hochech Tuchiyach is Dafka before. But Maseiah, so again, I was suggesting the first thing I said to you was maybe you can do both. First I didn't do Hochech Tuchiyach, and now during. So he suggests, perhaps, as we'll see, maybe things like invitations, which are clearly not during the Maisa Avera, I invited him on Tuesday. So if you hold that this Darabonin is his own thing called Messiah, maybe that's not relevant unless you're helping the person. Again, he didn't need you to help. He could have, and he could drive by himself too. But maybe you were helping him in the front seat, giving him directions. I don't know what would be an example of that. But the point is, you can easily imagine where that would only be limited to at the time of the driving, etc. But the fact that you invited him on Tuesday, even if you tell me he was going to spend the whole day in his house, and he's only driving because of you. But could be that that's still considered Charavra, and it's not Messiah, because you invited him on Tuesday. He suggested that as a possibility. Rav Lichtenstein only mentions that as a nafkemina between, is it Lifnaiver, or is it Messiah? I would add, which I anticipated to you, I don't think this is a chiddush, just a ha'ara, I would think it would be also a nafkemina of that third possibility of Hochech Tochiach, because Hochech Tochiach also applies only when it's before. So in light of these three understandings of the Derabbanan, Rav Lichtenstein suggests, kind of at a midpoint of the piece, he says maybe the issue of can you invite people who are going to drive on Shabbos, he says maybe this is a tully in that nafkamina. He says if it would be either of the first two possibilities, either that it's an expansion of Lifnaiver or an expansion of Hochech Tochiach, he says then we still have a problem. It's, even if you don't accept the remotion that it's a Daraisa, but you clearly, you know, okay, so the Daraisa didn't apply, but this is Durabana Lifnaiver, or this is Durabana not being Hochech Tochiach. I invited him, and I know it's likely he's going to drive. But, says Rav Lichtenstein, if you hold that the whole Durabana is at worst this new independent thing called Messiah, so he's very convinced of this, that Messiah is limited to the Shas Maisa, to the Shas Avera. And therefore, the fact you invited him on Tuesday or Thursday or even Friday afternoon, as long as it's not in the moment of Chil Shabbos, he suggests perhaps, at this moment, he says perhaps that this would be a basis of being Mekel. If you assume, number one, that the Daraisa doesn't apply. And number two is if the Derabanan is this Messiah, which only applies B'Shas Maisa. The question is, how do we paskin? Do we accept this Rush and this Tosfos? And if we accept it, what version of it do we accept? So this is, he feels very, very, it's intriguing in Lamdus, and very, very important and consequential halacha lamaisa. So I keep track of the time. So he points out the following. There's a well-known position of the Ramah. This is in Yoredeya, in Simon Kufnon Aleph. The Ramah quotes two deos about selling Gentiles items that they're going to likely use for Avodah Zarah. So there's one opinion that's Machmir, and there's a second opinion that's Mekil. Because this is again, we know that Lifnaiver applies to non-Jews, the classic case of Avram and Achai Lenochri, but the assumption is, as I say, most likely that this is an example of a Chad Avra, so it's not Lifnaiver Daraisa, but it's an Chad Avra where, you know, there's 10 stores in the mall. So the question is, you're selling, you know, barbecue tongs, and this Avodah Zarah, you know that they likely do the barbecues on their holiday. So that would be a Darabanan, so does it apply? So one opinion is yes, one opinion is no. The Ramah says Me'ikr Hadin we're Mekil, but you know Hamachmir Tavolov Bracha, Bal Nefesh Machmir, some lashon like that. There's a Chumer to be Machmir, but Me'ikr Hadin the Ramah is Mekil. The question is Bali Nefesh. I think he says Ramachmir, but the Me'ikr Hadin the Ramah is Mekil on that question. So it's a specific question of a Chad Avra Dinara for the non-Jew for before his holiday. The question is that a limited heter? Again, this is like classic. Brisk, classic Rav Lichtenstein analysis. This is a heter on the books. So how do we understand this? Is this a limited heter? Or is this a heter that is based on something wider and may be applicable to other cases? So he points out that there seem to be three different possible ways of understanding this Ramah. The first two are in the Shach, and they're both significant, and the second one in particular is very, very famous. The first idea that the Shach suggests, which may be for the non-brisker, just the easiest and maybe the most pashut, is because it's based on something that the Rama himself says, not in Shulchan Aruch, but the Rama says in the Darkei Moshe, in his commentary on the Torah. So there, the Rama points out that what he calls modern-day Gentiles, the Goyim Bizmanenu, that when they swear to God, they don't mean the Avodah Zarah of yesteryear, they mean the, quote, real God. And therefore, the context of that Darkei Moshe is slightly different than our case, which is, in general, is there an issue of doing business with a guy or not? So there used to be such an isser, because the worry was that perhaps, either for good or for bad, depending on how the business deal goes, he might swear in the name of his God. So if your business deal is going to cause him to swear in the name of his God, and the God is in the Avodah Zarah, that's a pasuk, that you can't do such a thing. So that would be a version, that would be a lifnei iver, to get the guy to do that. So the Darkei Moshe, on the tour, says that since nowadays, their God is our God, is the real God, that issue of doing business per se, you're not talking about necessarily before Yontif, that issue of would not be a problem. So Rav Lichtenstein says, okay, so that's one possibility. So just like that, here also we don't have to worry about selling them things before their Yomim Tovim, because maybe it's not Avodah Zarah anymore the way it used to be. Maybe that halacha was from the Zman of the Gemara was only when they had real Avodah Zarah, and what the Meiri famously refers to as, you know, they were pagan and they were not. I remember the lashon of the Meiri. They weren't bedarchei ha. He has a very famous lashon. Rav Lichtenstein liked to quote this also about Darchanim. So basically, how they were uncivilized. The old Avodah Zarah was like mamish, you know, ripping limbs off animals and defecating on their Avodah Zarah and this kind of stuff. And even if technically, whatever Christianity is, but they're civilized people, and maybe it's not even Avodah Zarah according to some Rishonim. So the Shach quotes this idea from the Darchei Moshe. So Rav Lichtenstein says that may very well be the pshat in the Ramah, but if that's the case, then is this a general din or a specific limited din? If that's the explanation, this is very limited din. Okay, so now we have a new chiddush that an area, one of the applications of lifnei iver, which used to apply to non-Jews, doesn't apply anymore because you can't help the non-Jew or do something that might lead the non-Jew to do an avera. But now, because they're not of the avodah zarah anymore, okay, but that wouldn't tell us anything about inviting a non-religious Jew for Shabbos. If this is the explanation of the Ramah, that's a good Ramah, it's good to know, but it's not relevant to our topic. But that's...
Then the Ramah, so that would apply even by Shteya, but the Nara, I'm saying, you're saying.
It was just not about a Zara, period. Right, good. That's also good Hara. That's also good Hara. Good, excellent. So that's the first explanation. The second idea is somewhat famous and controversial, and that is the Shach says as follows. We mentioned there were three possibilities. How do you understand this Isser Darabonan? It's Chad Avra Dinara. So the Tosus says there's a Darabonan. What's the Darabonan? So one possibility we said was maybe it's an expansion of Hochech Tochiach. So this is what the Shach says. That's the Shach's approach. That Hochech Tochiach is based on Arvus. Arvus means we care about our fellow Jew because we care about them. So we care about our children. Sometimes we have to tell them not to do things. So even though they don't like to hear it. So too, we care about our fellow Jew. Therefore, Hochech Tochiach, we have to tell them not to do things. So says the Shach, and here, that's his take on Tosus. You know, it's a svara. It's a good svara. But now comes the chiddush of the Shach, is that he holds that it's Hochech Tochiach and Arvus are not applicable to non-Jews or a Mumar, Yisrael. Now, clearly, that shows that he holds this halacha has nothing to do with Lifnei Iver. Because Lifnei Iver, we know by definition, going back to the original Gemara, applies to non-Jews. But he says that, but the Chad Avra Dinara, this Messiah thing, which is really based on Tochacha doesn't apply to non-Jews. With Chad Avra Dinara, you can sell things to people, even to non-Jews. There's no Isser. And then, getting back even to the Gemara Shabbos, he says this is the controversial part, says the Shach, there's no Arvus, there's no Chech Tochiach by Yisrael Mumar.
But there's no Arvus, there's no Chech Tochiach.
He holds that they're both, I think. If you take a look at it, Kuf Nun Aleph. Yes, he's their Mufka from it.
So I don't care about him being kind of Kiddush.
Yes, as I said, it's controversial. I have a very long piece in my Sefer about Lifnei Iver, but I actually speak more about the Shach in a different piece in the Sefer on Halitel Rosh of Yomus. There's a big machlokes between a number of poskim, including the Gilyan Marsha on the Shulchan Aruch, and the Yitzchak Shmelkis, the Beis Yitzchak, had to understand that Shach, and some connected to that topic. I'm happy to talk with you more about it, but that's not our topic right now. But for the Shach says this controversial thing. It's a machlokas how to understand it, and it's a machlokas whether to accept it. But the Shach says it, and the Pashtus is very radical. Some Achronim said, yeah, he said it, it's no problem. It makes sense. Aram Shik, Chacham Sofer, they accepted it. And they even applied it. And others just couldn't believe it. How could you be? The same, exactly the way you're asking me the question. How could it be? There's no Arvus, we don't care about our fellow Jews. But that's, maybe yes, maybe no. That seems to be what the Shach says. So Rav Lichtenstein says something very fascinating. It would take more time to process, to analyze. I wish I could speak to him about it. But he says he doesn't think, if that's the pshat, then he thinks here we might have a heter. He says it's hard to refer to one of these halachos. We have all sorts of halachos. We know not every halacha is so nice and warm and fuzzy and liberal. Right? Sometimes we are marchik people. Right? Sometimes we have to be marchik the mumar. That's what this halacha seems to be saying. Says it's hard to refer to a Jew who's coming to a Kiruv program, who's coming to your house for a Shabbos dinner, as the type of mumar that we're marchik from, that we don't care about. So why are you inviting him? She's not being inviting him? She's not inviting him? So he felt if that's, he's not, you know, for sure that's the pshat in the Ramah, but if that's the pshat in the Ramah, the second idea in the Shach, so he says it's so extreme that even if you accept it, but how could that apply to someone who's coming to an end job, turn Friday night to Shabbos, who's coming on some Eshat Torah program or something? So he felt that that might be a real basis of Kula. The third possibility he quotes, he just refers to Achronim, would be the biggest makil if it's true, which is he said maybe the pshat in the Ramah is he just rejects Tosfos in the Rosh. And it's not in the Gemara. You'll give a different explanation for the Gemara and Shabbos. But the Gemaras that speak about Lifnei Iver just say, two sides of the river is Asur, one side of the river is Mutter. So the Rishonim invented this idea of Misayeya, and we're clearing what does it mean, three possibilities. So maybe the Ramah just doesn't accept it. Now, that doesn't seem to be the majority of opinion, but if you're building a tshuva, so you want to keep the possibilities alive, and even certainly Snifi Lahakel. So of the three possibilities in the Ramah, if I understood correctly, he felt one would not help us at all. When I say help us, I mean assuming it's better for the Jews. As he says, he points out at the end of the piece that it's not so, Ramosha would just kind of handcuff the Jewish people if that became, halacha lamaisa, which it really hasn't, quite frankly. So if we want to have a good, sound, integrity-based reason to be mekel, which I think was Rothenstein's desire, so he says two of the three possibilities would be good for us. The first one wouldn't help us at all, because maybe that's limited to Avodah Zarah. But the other two, either that refers to a mumar and maybe these types of people wouldn't be included, or that the Ramah just simply didn't hold of it, those two things would help. Yes?
But if it doesn't refer to a mumar, then we have this in the Rabbanan. That's a problem. It doesn't work.
Oh, so I'm sorry, you're right. I'm sorry. I think you're right. I got confused. I think it's paradoxical, but I think I made a mistake. I think you're right. Right. Yes, you're right. I take it back. One out of three. Thank you, yes, that's correct. Get the Chiddush of the Shach, right, thank you. The Shach talks about it as a Kula. Because they're Mufka from it, so then we don't care about them. But, right, it turns out in our case, if we don't, right, so maybe, that's a good question, how you would understand that one. I'm not sure. Okay, the first and the third are the easiest to understand. The first, he says, clearly doesn't apply, and the third he suggests, if it's true, would certainly be Mekil. The next part, which I personally find to be the most interesting part, the last really meaty part of the tshuva, or the piece, which I find to be the most fascinating, sort of from a Lundish perspective, is where he spends a lot of time discussing the shita of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Now, in this tshuva that he quotes, Shlomo Zalman Orbach does not discuss inviting people over. I mentioned Shlomo Zalman Orbach earlier. As far as I know, and Rukhlesin gets back to his quote-unquote, as far as I know, there is a well-known shita of Shlomo Zalman about inviting people over. I've never, ever seen it inside. Rukhlesin refers to it. Others refer to it as, I think, Rabbi Bleich, in one of the articles he refers to it. So I believe that Rabbi Bleich says, and I trust Rabbi Bleich, I've never seen the article, Rabbi Bleich refers to it as a letter to the Or Sameach Yeshiva. I think that's maybe how you know it, that's how I know it. It's that Rabbi Bleich probably saw it. I assume Rabbi Bleich saw it. But that's not what we're referring to here. Rav Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva in the first volume of Michas Shlomo, which is not about inviting people over, but about giving people food if you know they're not going to make a bracha. Now, this is, again, I don't know what the words were in the shir, but in the Hebrew write-up of the shir, I think you referred to it as madhim. It's an astounding, it's a shocking psak of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. It seems to go against a beferish Ramah, which says in Rechaim, you cannot give things to people if you know they're not going to make a bracha. But Shlomo Zalman Orbach was asked if you have people over, workers or guests and stuff in the house, And again, it's hard to know exactly. Every case has to be understood. But it sounds like the people he's referring to have either a positive or at least a parv attitude towards Torah, even though they're not from. And the fear is that if you don't offer them anything, they will be turned off. And again, we know, unfortunately, it's too close to home, painfully, how decisions that many from people consider to be very righteous could turn many other people off, even other from people off, let alone people who aren't from. So Shlomo Zalman was incredibly sensitive to this, and he wonders about this question. And he comes up with this humongous, very world-famous kula. Shlomo Zalman says it's mutter to give them, even though you're not going to make a bracha. Again, it seems to be a fairish against the Ramah. So how could he accept that? So he says, well, that's referring to someone where it won't make a difference. But if this person is going to be turned off to Torah, so then that is a bigger michshol. And basically what Shlomo Zalman says is, to use Rav Lichtenstein's words, we can look at the tmuna klalit, we can look at the big picture. And the idea of Lifnei Iver is, we're not supposed to be doing anything to be marchik people from Judaism. So usually that means if you push them into the you push them down, that's worse than standing up. But if someone's about to walk into a 10-foot bore, and I push them down, but they miss the bore, so maybe they scrape their knee, but they didn't break their leg, right? When they realize why I pushed them, no, yes, that once they realize it, of course they'll be appreciative, right? You helped them; you were doing it to help them, not to hurt them. Says Rav Lichtenstein, that's the idea of Lifnei Iver as well. Lifnei Iver is we're supposed to not be involved in being marchik people, right? It's the inverse of being makar of people. We're not supposed to be marchik people. So usually if you give somebody something, even to do a small isser, so you're being marchik them. But in this case, and this is this is mamish, the overwhelming, you need broad shoulders like Shlomo Zalman to assume the hashkafa behind the psak and to give the actual psak. But he assumes that having a negative attitude towards Torah, even if at the moment you're not any more observant lamaisa, which is your attitude, having a positive versus a negative attitude towards Torah, that is being marchik. That's being further away from Torah. That attitude alone. And therefore, if I'll do anything that will give him a worse attitude towards Torah, that is lifnei iver. That's a form of marchik. And therefore, if I can give him something, he'll be over on a small avera. But in the bigger picture, wow, the guy with this kippah, he was so nice to me, treated me with such respect, says that is not, it's not a derabanan. It's by definition, I don't know if you call it a mitzvah, but it's by definition not an avera. It's not the avera of lifnei iver. This is the famous, world-famous psak of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. So Rav Lichtenstein analyzes it. And again, my gut, this is me editorializing, you could disagree with me if you want, I assume that Rav Lichtenstein desperately wants to accept this. For two reasons. First of all, it's Yedua, his love affair with Rav Shlomo Zalman. Number one. So if this is Rav Shlomo Zalman going on a limb, I just still need to want to support him. But number two, it fits with Rav Lichtenstein's own personality in Hashkafa. And yet, part of that same personality in Hashkafa, Rav Lichtenstein had radical halakhic integrity. He really has a very hard time accepting it. And a big part of this piece is him trying to preserve Shlomo Zalman by limiting him. And he goes step by step. He says, what do we say, this chiddush, this idea that we can look at the big picture, mamishbi, that's truly a messiah, I'm giving him a dvar iser. Or dvar, I'm handing him something he's not going to make a bracha on. So he says, would you say that on an iser daraisa, if it would be a lifnei iver daraisa? He thinks that's a road too far. But again, Rav Lichtenstein has already told us, he doesn't think that's relevant to our case. So what about if it is either the Avera is the Darabanan or the Lifnei Iver is the Darabanan? Either way, you get with the Darabanan. So there he thinks, maybe we have more of a chance. He says, so what about this applying this to Shabbos invitations? So he says, even in Rav Shlomo Zalman's case, he refers to it as the present assessment is speculative. You don't really know for sure what his attitude is going to be. When you invite the person for Shabbos, you don't really know, right? Certain people, as we probably all know, certain people in the Kiruv world are like delusional, right? They think that if they'll just meet me, they'll just be at my Shabbos table, right? Then that'll change their whole life. Okay, it could be. And it could be that they'll think it's nice for you and I'd rather, go to the races or something. But Lamaisa, but Shlomo Zalman didn't care. Shlomo Zalman's point is you can speculate. Something now that has a chance to help, that he felt that was enough. So Rav Lichtenstein, when he's analyzing this, so he felt that there seems to be the basis, you know, Shlomo Zalman in this tshuva didn't apply it to invitations. Rav Lichtenstein thought it makes sense, if you accept it, to apply it to invitations. The question is, would you even apply it if it's treyavar denara? Rav Lichtenstein thinks not. He's not willing to apply this. I don't know if Shlomo Zalman really was or wasn't, but he's not. But it's okay because Rav Lichtenstein himself thinks that inviting people for Shabbos is not treyavar denara. It's not daraisa. He thinks that's only derabanan. But nevertheless, he says, he thinks that there are reasons to limit, or at least to question this tshuva, the chiddush. So very briefly, he mentions two ideas, each of which are fascinating, both of which I'm happy to be ma'arach in here, but for now, just briefly. So one is, he mentions the following. There's a big discussion in Rishonim and Achronim about lifnei iver on an isser derabanan, right? Which brachos, presumably the case in Shlomo Zalman's tshuva, is an isser derabanan. Chicken and milk, something like that. An isser derabanan. So I can't do it. But if I do it, am I over on lifnei iver derabanan or daraisa? So Rav Lichtenstein just mentions it seems to be a machlokas. If I remember correctly, I think it's a machlokas two different tosasim. So, but some of the achronim, I have it in my notes. Rav Lichtenstein just says achronim, but in my notes I have that as the Minchas Chinuch, the Tshuvas Pnei Yeshua, that's Pnei Yeshua's grandfather, and Rav Chanan in the Kovetz Aros here on Yevamos. So they all say, how could giving anyone help with Nisr Darabanan be only Lifnei Iver Darabanan if in the Rishonim one of the things that is Lifnei Iver Da'oraisa is giving bad advice? So how could this, as the Minchas Chinuch and the Pnei Yeshua scream, how could this be any better than Eitz Hara? Eitz Hara, you just give someone intentional bad business advice, is an Isr Da'oraisa. So helping them eat chicken and milk is only Nisr Darabanan. At the very least, you've given him bad advice. In essence, you advise them to eat the chicken and milk. How could that be any better than that? So Rav Lichtenstein quotes Achronim. I assume he has in mind a fascinating, amazing tshuva of the Achiezer. Chaim Moser Grudzinski discusses this. And Rav Lichtenstein quotes the name of Achronim is what you have in the Achiezer, is that he assumes that this idea that even on an Isser Darabanan, you could be over Daraisa because it's bad advice, that only applies if the person didn't realize it was usher. Even we have these two examples on a daraisa level, bad advice and averos. But there's a fascinating, says Rav Chaim Moser, and Rav Lichtenstein explains this beautifully, there's a fascinating contrast. Bad advice is when we assume the person wouldn't want to lose the money. He's buying high because you told him it's going to get even higher. if he knew it was going to go down, he probably wouldn't buy. Right? But he's trusting, he doesn't want it. When it comes to the Yayin Lenazir, right, he wants the Avera, he knows it's Usr. So says Rav Chaim Moser, this is Rav Lichtenstein quotes, says, it's true we have Lifnei Iver by both, but they're different. The Lifnei Iver of bad advice only applies if the person doesn't know the facts or doesn't care. But assuming that he does care and is being somach on you. So if you're going to tell me that helping a person in an Avera is Lifnei Iver of helping Averos, so then it doesn't matter that he doesn't care. He doesn't care, he wants to be over, okay. That you still can't give it to him. Lifnei Iver. But if you're gonna say no, he's Usr Midin Eitzara, Midin Eitzara can only apply if he doesn't realize. But if he knows it's Usr for himself and he doesn't care, that's like the guy saying, I want this thing, I don't care, it's a vanity purchase. I don't care if it's gonna go down in value. I want it because I want it. I know it's Usr, but I don't care. So if a person says, I know it's Usr, but I don't care, you cannot be over Midin Eitzara, because you're not giving him the advice. You're not giving him bad advice. He knows all the facts. He just doesn't care. So in that case, so the Achronim say, perhaps that would be limited. So here also Rav Lichtenstein says, could you apply this idea of Eitzara to our case? So it's very interesting. He says, maybe this Rav Shlomo Zalman is connected to that. Meaning, are we allowed to look at the big picture or not? So he says, maybe if we see that, if we could apply Eitz Hara to the case, so then we could look at the big picture. Because the idea of Lifnei Iver Eitz Hara is focused on the person. Whether he wants, he doesn't want, he cares, he doesn't care. So then I can look at the big picture, which kind of Lichtenstein feels is a very kind of a liberal, radical type of thing to do, because you're helping with an aveir here and now, who give you a right to look at the big picture. So he says, if the whole thing is about the person, maybe you can. But he says, if you'll tell me, which Rav Lichtenstein seems to accept, that, as Rav Chaim Moser, that in aveiros, where the person knows and doesn't care, you cannot apply. You cannot apply Yitzhara to that. Yitzhara is only in a case where if the person is Meshoga, he didn't know that he can't eat chicken and milk. So if he didn't know you can't eat chicken and milk, and you give it to him, that's lifna iver d'oraisa midin Yitzhara. He didn't know. He's equivalent to the guy who's trusting your business advice. So that's bad advice. But if he knows you can't eat chicken and milk and you ask him for it, maybe that's lifna iver but only d'rabanan, because you can apply Yitzhara, and maybe on an Yitzhara d'rabanan, you can't be worse than the person himself. That's, so Rav Lichtenstein accepts that. He says, you can't apply, if you want to use the Eitzara idea, he says you cannot apply the idea of the big, you can apply the idea of the big picture. But any case where the Eitzara is not relevant, which he thinks it wouldn't be relevant probably here, because the person wants to drive. They probably know it's even not allowed. So then he doesn't think he can do that. That's one area where he limits Rav Shlomo Zalman. The second area which he limits Rav Shlomo Zalman, which I think is really, really fascinating, and with this we're going to have to conclude in 2 minutes, is a very famous Lamdasha discussion, which Rav Lichtenstein has here in the piece, which goes back to earlier Achronim, including Rabbi Ganak quotes it in his Sefer from the Rav as well, which is, how do you understand Lifnei Iver? Is it an Isser Kloli, or is it an Isser Prati? Is Lifnei Iver a Prat in each Aver? If I help you with Yain leNazir, then even though I'm not a Nazir, but I get an Avera in the books as violating Nazir, violating Yivra Menachai, or is it just this independent Isser Kloli? So Rav Elchanan Wasserman and the Kovetz Aras and the Ponovitcher Rav and apparently Soloveitchik as well, a lot of Achronim speak about this in the context of a famous Machlokas in Sanhedrin between the Baal HaMor and the Ramban and the Milchamos, whether you would say Yehareg Val Yaver on Lifnei Iver. You help somebody do Avodah Zarah. So he was Yehareg Val Yaver for him. Is there Hareg Val Yaver for you to do the Lifnei Iver? The Baal HaMor implies that it is. And Ramban and the Milchamos, Mamash says, as Rabbi Ganak in his Hesped for the Rav said, the people make a mistake that the real inspiration for the Rav and the Briskers was the Ramban. There are certain Rambans where it's like he's speaking like a Reb Chaim in the Ramban. So this is one of those Rambans. He's writing like a Brisker Rosh Hashiva. The Ramban says, what are you talking about? It's only a din in Lifnei Iver. How could you hold that that's Erek Bal Yavor? So many of the Achronim point out that that's Lachora this Machlokis. Apparently their Baal HaMor held it's a Prat in the Avera. So then if it's Yargval Yavor, then the Lifnei Iver is Yargval Yavor. But if you hold it's an Isser Kloli, like the Ramban apparently held, so then perhaps you could, then there's no Yargval Yavor. So here Rav Lichtenstein says, and with this we'll have to conclude, Rav Lichtenstein says, and this is a Chiddush which I actually have, it's the last section in the Siman in my Sefer on Lifnei Iver, the last thing is quoting this from Rav Lichtenstein. He says that he thinks that Shlomo Zalman Orbach's Chiddush is also totally on this Chakira. He says it's such a big chiddush, Rav Shlomo Zalman. It's only yitachin. It's not mukhrach. It's only yitachin if you hold Snister Kloli. There's this new thing called Lifnei Iver. It's all about trying to be makara people. So maybe it has its own rules. Maybe. He says, but if you hold Snister Prati, that it's as if I'm doing Ritzicha, I'm doing, you know, Shtias Yayin Lenozir or something like that. So Bashas Aveira, can we look at the big picture? We don't look at the big picture. We just look at the here and the now, right now that you're helping with an Aveira. You can't look at the big picture then. If the whole idea is an Isser Kloli, then maybe the Kloli is the big picture. So he says, maybe. So Rav Shlomo Zalman, Rav Lichtenstein, he thinks that there's a basis for the Chiddush, but he's not willing to be completely reliant on this. Again, there's more to say, but we're running out of time. So just to conclude on the Lamaisa of it, so in the end, what Rav Lichtenstein said, he mentions, I don't know if it was Talmidim, he said he was specifically asked by a Kiev organization in Russia, and he gave the following Hadracha, which I believe is also what's well known in the name of Shlomo Zalman Orbach and this letter to Or Sameach and other places, which is this middle position. Not Rav Moshe Feinstein, who held it's Isser D'oraisa and it's Mesis and it's terrible, you can never do it. And not Rav David Cohen and Rav Sternbach, who hold it's Mutter Heter Kiruv. They held the middle position, which is that you have to give a plausible invitation to give the person an opportunity not to be over. Even though you know it's Karav Levade, they won't accept. But it's a good faith invitation. If it's not a good faith invitation, then you didn't do anything. That's a joke. But if you made a good faith invitation that the person could stay at your house, even though there's a 1 in a million chance he's going to say yes, say he held that's enough to bolster, then we could look at the big picture and see this. Because that takes us off of... and that is, again, as I say, I think that Rav Lichtenstein himself paskin this way. I heard it from Rav Rosenzweig. Maybe he was based on Rav Lichtenstein as well. I'm not sure. And that really ended up being, I think, as I say, Rav Shlomo Zalman's position. So you see a lot of factors here. You see a lot of the wide scope. A lot of what Lichtenstein does is based on Rishonim, but he was very, very comfortable with the classical Achronim as well. When you read his stuff, more so probably even than my Rebbe. He quotes, he listens, in terms of what he quotes. He quotes a lot of Achronim, especially on Shulchan Aruch and Tshuvas. You see that here. You see his role as a posek. You see his role as a lamdan. And he also mentions at the end of the piece, it's kedai to look for it on the internet. The Hebrew and the English are both online. He also speaks about another factor, which is meta halachi values, which I didn't have time to get into, which he just says, even if it's technically mutter, but you have to talk about halachi values. Should she have an open parking lot because it's going to include, you know, encourage people to come? He held that that was terrible. He says there's other factors for it's one thing for you to invite people over, but for the shul to do it, because that each case on its own has to be judged. You have to think about these other factors. But that's some of the lamdas and some of the lamaisa of Lifnei Iver. And Yehi Zichro Baruch. Thank you for coming.